In fact, there is one whole realm of philosophical thinking, a school of philosophy which simply says, esse e percipi. What exists is only by virtue of its being perceived. All that exists is existent by virtue of being perceived. If you don't perceive it, there is no guarantee that it exists. There is one whole school of philosophy, very powerful school of philosophy. In Buddhism, for example, it's a very great school, which is called Vijnanavada. Everything that exists is only by virtue of its being perceived. If it is not perceived, if it is not seen, experienced, it doesn't exist. What is the proof? In any case, that is a critical intelligence. What is the proof that it exists when you do not perceive it, or nobody perceives it? There are what are called solipsists in the West, who believe that you only see your perceptions. Existing, whatever you see existing is nothing but your perception, your own perceptions. There was one Western philosopher in the recent times who said, you are in a compartment in a train which moves out of the platform. On the platform, of course, there are people who see the train and who can also see the wheels on which the train is running. The moment it goes out of the platform and in the whole surrounding there is nobody now to perceive, the passengers see only the compartments. What is the guarantee that wheels are still continuing to exist? It may look absurd because we assume that it must be. Isn't it absurd to think that suddenly the wheels disappear as soon as the platform is gone? But the critical philosopher says that there is a very good ground to argue. This is called critical reflection. You simply assume that it is so. Well, it may not be so. Now, this idea that it may not be so, it could not be so, there are reasons, or you can find out arguments for it, is the activity of critical reflection. This is an extreme example I gave you of assumptions. But there are many other examples of critical reflection. There is a very great book written by a great philosopher called Kant. It is called Critic of Your Reason. He said that at a certain stage of his life, whatever he was thinking was as if in a dogmatic slumber. He was sleeping and whatever he thought was thought in a dogmatic manner. Until the kind of reflection that I gave awakened him. He did not take lightly this kind of a critical reflection which I gave you just now. So, he began to critically reflect without assumptions as to how we think. It was as it were trying to lift above your thinking process. Actually, when you think, you are involved in thinking process. You do not even become aware that you are thinking. It is, you are in the train of thinking. To become aware that you are thinking itself is a very great effort. And then to be able to perceive the entire process of thinking, not only periodically go back and perceive, but developing in your mind a kind of a perception which can stand behind everything that is seen as process of reflection. How the whole intellect proceeds, how it reflects, how it thinks, the entire train of thinking, to be able to perceive it from outside as it were, not understanding but reflecting upon it and trying to see how the whole thinking process proceeds. That is why I use the word critic of pure reason. It's not a book on pure reason, which describes how pure reason thinks. But it reflects upon all the assumptions of thinking, questions all of them, and asks whether any conclusions can be arrived at or not. It does not say conclusions must be arrived at. Conclusions can be arrived at or not. This is the entire process. A true philosopher must have this ability to be able to go above the process of thinking, examine all the corners of thinking, examine the assumptions of thinking, assumptions of observation, assumptions of any kind. And then to reflect and to arrive at a conclusion. This is what is called the purely philosophic method. A philosopher, therefore, assumes nothing. That is the fundamental characteristic of a philosopher. A scientist assumes, a physicist assumes, matter exists. Biologist assumes that life exists. Psychologist assumes that mind exists. A philosopher asks the question, does matter exist? Can matter exist? Should matter exist? Should matter exist inevitably, necessarily? The philosopher asks the question, does life exist? Should it exist? Should it exist necessarily? And similar with the mind, does mind exist? Can mind exist? Should the mind exist necessarily? This free inquiry, free from all dogma, free from all assumptions, this is the purity of philosophical reflection. Now, scientists believe that this is a good exercise, but you cannot arrive at any conclusion. So it's an amusement, an excursion. Your conclusions are not scientific, they are not knowledge. They are only speculations. They might even raise a question whether real criticality is at all possible. They might grant that some criticality is always possible. You can question this dogma or that dogma, this assumption or that assumption. But to claim that all assumptions can be completely questioned, such a possibility, they might even doubt. But even if you say that, well, you are able to do it, you are super Kant, not only Kant but super Kant, that is possible, even then, you cannot arrive at conclusions. It is not knowledge. Now, this method of critical reflection is thoroughly used by Sri Aurobindo in The Life Divine. It is because of that reason that we can say Life Divine is a philosophical work. It accepts no dogmas, no assumptions. Questions everything, allows you to question everything. It's a real free inquiry. And this is done in such a perfection that you can say, technically speaking, there is no flaw in the whole of The Life Divine in regard to this spirit of free inquiry. Now, Sri Aurobindo also would argue and agree that if a critical inquiry, I'm taking more time than necessary, but I'll continue just for a short time more. That critical inquiry is useful, necessary. This is what he's following actually. But there is a limitation of this critical inquiry. And this is a very important characteristic of the life divine. Even of this critical inquiry, there is a limitation. Critical inquiry certainly should question all the assumptions. And if any assumption is presented as an assumption, it should be bombarded. It should be exploded. If it is only an assumption. But Sri Aurobindo makes a distinction between assumptions which underlie sense observation and pure intellectual process of thinking on the one hand, and the realm of superior experiences, not assumptions, superior experiences.